Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Graduation is a sweet occasion, but finding the perfect gift can be a bitter struggle. MMS.com has a solution. Personalized M&Ms. Just imagine the look on your grad's face when they receive a custom candy creation featuring their school's colors, name, and even their photo printed right on some M&Ms. It's a thoughtful way to celebrate their accomplishments and make the occasion even more special. Visit MMS.com to create your own personalized gifts and party favors for graduations, weddings, birthdays, and more. That's MMS.com. Use code WONDERY to receive 15% off your next order.
Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 671. Hey, it's Kyle Clark with the Nerdist Community Cookbook.
That was a good one. You got a little Michael McDonald at the end there.
It's a Nerdist Community Cookbook.
All right, now everybody stop right there.
Kyle Clark's a walk around Muppet.
That's made it into my act.
What,
I've started talking about being a walk around Muppet.
You are.
I quote you for that.
If you swing your arms more, if you just pretend your hands are heavier than you are, then you can
I actually
be.
Had to stop doing that because I used to walk like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo when I was in high school.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. It was sometimes your arms are growing a little long and they just sort of go.
What's going on in the mystery machine? Just bad 80s comedy premises with Michael Jackson. How come socks have tiny hangers?
Oh, what a career he could have had in that direction.
Where do all of the socks go?
Now I just want to hear Jerry Seinfeld singing some Michael McDonald songs.
What? I can't do that one.
It's like the chameleon who walks in front of the plaid.
I keep forgetting. I'm not in love anymore.
There we go.
What a fool believes.
That was pretty good.
George.
So this first community corkboard posting is from...
posting from Kyle.
It's a David Zegler. And he wrote a book called The Making of Diabetes, the Musical, the Graphic Novel.
Fuck yeah, David!
And it's a prose book that then periodically interrupts itself to be a graphic novel that also has a script for a musical that the character is writing.
Prose interrupters!
So I can only imagine that the book is just a perfect circle or like orb out of phantasm. Because it's just slowly a snake eating its own tail.
Aliens being squashed down from the gravity. I'm just doing Michael McDonald. Doing the plots of spoiler plots from 70s horror movies.
That really needs to be a web series we do for the channel. Michael McDonald spoils 70s movies.
Look out for the tall man.
Have you ever seen the extended cut of that? My roommate in college was obsessed with Phantasm, so I know way too much about that franchise. There's a couple of deleted scenes from that movie that address things that happen later in the movie that you need to know. It's really weird.
Oh, yeah. The original cuts is sort of puzzling.
It's real choppy. And
wait,
then you
what?
See, they shot those scenes. I saw it probably 10 times, then saw an extended cut. I'm like, no, that's real necessary information.
I think what happened is that the 70s happened, and then the cut of the movie, the original cut of the movie was wandering through a mausoleum, and then an orb with a drill came through and just sucked a lot of the juice out of it. I think that's what happened.
And creepy Jawa knockoffs.
Yes.
Oh, so good.
What's next on the cardboard?
All right, so this one, if anybody goes to this, I want you to respond to events@nerdist.com because Tom Miller's wife is holding a cosplay roundtable in Ontario, Canada.
Okay.
She wants all of the cosplayers of Ontario to meet up at the Prowse Pottery and Soap Company at 116 Ottawa Street in Hamlin, Ontario. And they're going to do a meetup to try to figure out how to maximize the community of cosplayers at any expertise level in Canada.
Enjoy your poutine!
Tom, I'm going to be honest. I noticed right now you didn't put a date for your wife's event. So really, really screwing her over on this. But somebody just go hang out there at
the
Prowse Pottery and Soap Company and just dress up as a kid superhero. And I imagine somebody will be like, they'll tell you the date.
I keep forgetting to put a date in this email. I keep forgetting how to properly promote cosplay.
That's actually got a good little vocal hook there. That was, I was sort of like, all right. And then I was like, oh, that's actually catchy.
I keep forgetting that all Canadians say eh. I keep forgetting.
I just like the idea of a bunch of polite people dressed as superheroes, like meeting in a soap store.
Is this the day? Like a bunch of people show up every day.
Just start doing it every day. Let's make this a Tuesdays with Maury situation. People just slowly learn to love again.
This episode is Robin Lord Taylor, who could not be a sweeter dude. He was on, well, first of all, he played Sam on Walking Dead, so he had a couple episode arc on Walking Dead. And, of course, you know him as Oswald Cobblepot, a.k.a. the Penguin in Gotham.
The who?
Penguin.
Oh.
My mom used to call it a penguin when I was a kid.
Oh,
she'd go, look at the penguins.
Aww.
I think maybe
Sharon.
I might have said penguins, and so
she took it on.
She took it on and reflected it back at me to teach me a lesson because I was stupid. And she was right to do it. Mocking your children. Robin Lord Taylor is the final season of Gotham is this Monday, May 4th at 8 p.m. I adore this man. And
you mean final episode?
The final episode of the season finale.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. What did I say?
Final season.
The season finale.
And in my brain, it immediately went to that, well, Gotham's been on for way longer than I remember. It was a strong 10-year run.
The year is 2023.
Man, we really got these backlogged for a while.
Yep, that's right. This is episode number 6,070.
Somewhere Matt just got a little shiver.
6,071. Episode Nervous Podcast number 671 with Robin Lord Taylor.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Yes, congratulations.
Thank you. I don't know what to do with that now. Like, I guess I don't know.
I think you tell everybody all the time. I'm just kidding.
Oh, this Webby shirt? Mm-hmm. Don't worry about it. It's not.
No, it's cool.
You wouldn't understand
it.
It's a thing that winners like me get, but don't worry about it. You'll get one someday. You'll probably get one someday.
Maybe at some point. But it's okay.
But it's
all good.
You couldn't have this one. This one's mine. Yeah. But you could have your. Maybe you'll have your own.
Maybe you'll have your own. Make a web series. Figure it out.
Yeah. Maybe it's tough. It's not easy.
You have great tweets.
You have really good. Your social media is really. Your Instagrams are that cat
on point.
Your cat at eating salad was because cats don't eat salad.
That's an
award-winning cat salad picture. So you're tuning in right now, listening to Cat Salad with Chris Hardwick and Robin Lord Taylor.
Yes.
Would cat salad, do you think that would be about cats eating salad, or would that be like putting a bunch of cats in a bowl and taking pictures
Either way, I'm into it. I'm all about it. I mean, Spaghetti Cat was a big moment for me. And I know that – does anyone even remember Spaghetti Cat? Like that was – Is that a thing? No, I don't know.
It's fucking funny.
Yeah, that was my jam. Still is my jam.
It's not a former jam.
No, it doesn't go. Spaghetti Cat never goes away.
Now, is your hair not normally jet black?
No.
This is for Oswald.
This is for Oswald. Yes. Yeah. I am naturally blonde as blonde.
Did you dye your hair before you auditioned for the show? Or were they like, we gotta dye?
No. Yeah. I was blonde at the audition at the callback. And then they were like, by the way, you're completely changing your appearance for the show. And of course I was totally fine with that. And you know, I've
do you like being goth?
It's okay.
Yeah.
It's a thing. It's a choice. You know, like I catch my reflection and I still to this day like have moments where I'm like, oh, that's me.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would think out of that group, Oswald would probably be the goth kid.
For sure. Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, I'm you know, I listen to the Smiths. I do a lot of research. The Clash. I'm all about it. Yeah.
I just feel like Oswald followed Morrissey around for a while.
Definitely.
He was really.
Went on the tour. Yeah.
Snuck backstage.
Tried to be a vegetarian for a second. Didn't work.
Didn't work. And then until Morrissey was like, meat is murder.
Right,
and he was like,
right.
What?
No.
Fuck off. Sorry.
Exactly.
You lost me.
He wanted a tuna sandwich.
You lost me.
That's what he wanted. He really wanted that.
Murder is murder. I mean, let's just get beyond that too. I mean,
well, yeah, that's a whole other thing. Yeah.
Murder. That's a whole other.
What would that be? Humanitarian?
Yeah, totally.
Oswald is not
you,
that.
You know, I had, when you came on Talking Dead, I before like the day before you came on, and they were like, oh, and Robin played Sam. I'm like, oh my God, that's right.
Right?
I had not made the connection.
I know. My life is divided between two people, people who knew me before, people who know me after. And to this day, when I see the people who knew me before, they have a moment where they're like, I will be like 4 feet away from them on the street, and they won't know it's me until I'm like...
Right in their face. Yeah. Sam had a pretty brutal...
It was rough for Sam.
The zombie apocalypse is very difficult, Robin.
I would not be that different from if I were in that situation. I think I would be very similar.
I wouldn't have made it that far. Sam made it quite a way.
He was lucky to meet Rick.
Yeah.
I mean, that was
He had
it.
A girlfriend for a while.
I know. He was good. He was doing fine. He got Rick's watch, and then it was Terminus and that.
Rick is, I think... the opposite of whatever a lucky rabbit's foot is, everyone they come in contact with,
absolutely, and even then it's not like guaranteed. Yeah, I mean, you could be Rick's BFF, and obviously it's not gonna
work out.
Beth,
but now you've got this crazy huge show, which I mean, it's very rare that you get a job that changes everything overnight. Usually, it's just like, oh, you've been working for like 12 or 15 years, and finally people go, oh, yeah, that guy. But you like just snatched the public's eye.
Yeah, and I had been around for like 12, 15 years. You know, like I've been doing, you know, I'd like professional, like I went to New York right after graduating, and then I, you know, kicked it and did the commercials and the Law and Orders.
The 12-year overnight success. You were on Law and Order?
Yes.
Which Law and Orders were you on?
I was on the original Law and Order 3 separate times.
Bum, bum. Which one?
Different characters. The
No,
the,
but like,
the,
what was your...
Oh, which one? Okay, yeah. So the first character I played was an escapee from a Christian, like, molesting cult.
Okay.
You know.
Sure.
Sure. The second role was...
Who was the DA? Was it McCoy?
I didn't even make. I was just one of the. I was in the house that
you were part of the law, not the order.
It was Dennis Farina was.
Oh,
yeah,
got
and,
it.
And Jesse L. Martin like broke down the door, and I was there.
Nice.
And,
okay.
Yeah. The second one, I was the car stereo installer with tattoos who witnessed something. I can't tell you what that is. And then the third one, I played. I played a gay basher. It's unclear if the character was gay, but I killed Cheyenne Jackson's boyfriend in front of a gay bar.
Oh,
yeah.
Did you got convicted, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Finally.
Good.
Yeah. It, you know, for a second we didn't know.
No.
For a second I may have gotten off.
But at the end, it came out all
the dunk dunk came
God,
out.
I always wanted to be in a. I did a CSI, but I never did a Law and Order.
You live in L.A.
I know.
Yeah,
that's the
New
problem.
York.
I know. Just for a minute. But it's not – is Law & Order still on or is
no,
it not
the,
on?
No, the original is not on. SVU is on. I was on that as well. Played a rapist. I mean, but it
if
just –
if you're a guest star on Law & Order, you've done something
you've
horrible.
You've done something terrible.
Yeah. There's no – you're just going to be – you're going to be not a – but it's ironic now – now I'd love to see Oswald on Law & Order. Like, that'd be a great...
Oh, yeah.
That would be an amazing episode.
He would totally get off. He would not, like...
Law & Order Gotham.
Yeah, right? Yes. Crossover. I don't know. Do NBC and Fox talk to each other?
I mean, can we... Is it possible to make that happen? Because that'd be really rad. That's and I know you did some stuff with Billy Eichner for a while, right?
Yes.
You guys, did you go to Edinburgh?
Yes, we did. Yes, Billy Eichner is one of my best friends. We went to Northwestern together, and then after we graduated, we lived together in Northwestern, lived together in New York for several years, and in that time we created a show called Creation Nation,
mm-hmm.
in which we sort of developed his man on the street persona,
yep.
thing, which has obviously like completely taken off for him. He's like unbelievably good at it. We actually, we initially tried to do it, the both of us, where we were both talking to people, and it was very clear from the first day that I cannot do it.
That's a very specific skill
absolutely
set.
Absolutely horrified.
Yeah.
Talking to, yeah. Yeah. He, is completely fearless when it comes to that. I, however, am not. I went behind the camera and I was holding the camera while he would say insane things to people on the streets of New York City. And anyway, but yeah, then we took the show to Edinburgh. We sold a script to Bravo. It was like, it was a really amazing, it was an amazing moment. And yeah, and I got to like, you know, meet Joan Rivers three times, which
oh,
I
she
mean,
was the best.
Liv, I just, I mean, I can't tell you. She's yeah, yeah.
Did you get to hang out with her to any extent?
A little bit. I mean, like she was at Edinburgh as well. Like when we were there, and so she had a show, and we went backstage, and we were like hanging out and talking to her and stuff. And like, honestly, like the nicest woman in show business I have yet to meet to this day. Like unbelievably supportive of young people, of new talent, of just you know. She was such a huge influence on myself and Billy, of course. And, you know, yeah, it's everything. Like, I just bow down to her memory.
So your background, well, I would imagine, is your background more in just general acting in theater, or did you want to specifically focus on comedy?
It was general acting in theater, definitely. Yeah. And, but you know, randomly, like through my friendship with Billy, like, you know, it was a good match because, well, you know, Billy obviously is Billy, who is a comedic genius. And, you know, it was very clear from the beginning, like our dynamic on stage where, like, I was very obviously the straight man. And so, like, I learned early on, there is no going up against Billy Eichner, especially when there's a live audience. Like, you are going to lose. So I learned, you know, to basically do the exact opposite of what he was doing, you know, which was to listen and, yeah, like, you know, and, you know, be receptive and, you know, like, carry, you know, help carry the load in that way. But, like, my background was always in theater and the, you know, the drama.
And so how theatrical, I mean, because obviously with Oswald, you want to, he is technically a very big character, but you still want to root him.
Yes.
And so there is that sort of, you know, I almost feel like, I mean, this sounds crazy, but since this subgenre is so prevalent right now, I almost feel like there should be a comic book acting class, which sort of teaches you to kind of straddle that line between it's like, okay, you know, your character's going to make some very bold choices, yeah, but you still, because the genre looks so gritty now and so like real, you know, it's like you got to have to straddle these two lines.
Totally, absolutely, I give all credit to Bruno Heller, who is our showrunner, who did Rome and The Mentalist and, you know, of course, now Gotham. He, you know, created, like, the language for the character and also, like, you know, just the where he's coming from, like and also tied it into the comics. Like when I got the job, I went, you know, we're really lucky, and to completely nerd out, I got to meet Jeff Johns, who's the head of DC and you know, like, you know, insane. And then I said to him, I was like, you know, if you know of any comics that, you know, address like Oswald's background or, you know, any sort of like origin stuff, like in the canon, like, you know, just let me know the titles. I'll go find them or whatever. He was like, no, what's your address? And then he sends me like 3 days later, like a hand selected, you know, comics about that, you know, specifically about Oswald's journey, like to where he ends up and, you know, that really addressed his background. And then, you know, through that, I learned that he was a bullied kid. And, you know, it was like that's what really hooked me into like the humanity of the character and something that I could really identify with and make more, help me make him more of a, you know, a three-dimensional person as opposed to just a villain. You know,
yeah, because otherwise,
like a snidely whiplash doing evil things,
exactly,
for the sake of being evil, yeah,
exactly. Otherwise, it's just the sort of, you know, two dimensional, kitschy old Batman series where it's like, I'm just evil, quang, quang, quang,
right,
quang.
Which there is nothing wrong with that.
No, that's fun.
Burgess Meredith, I mean, amazing, like,
but probably wouldn't work so well for this iteration.
With this iteration, exactly. Because really, yeah, that's what they're going for, is they're going for like the actual humanity of these characters and like trying to find, like, yeah, like you said, like straddle that line between like reality and comic and fantasy and, you know, and figure out like where in between we can, you know, create these characters.
Have you been, you must have been to conventions at this point. Have you been to Comic-Cons?
Yeah. It's amazing. It's insane. I mean, my life in this last year has just been like, to go from where I was a year ago to then having fans, it's like, It's a lot. It's amazing. Like, I mean, you want to be, as an actor, you want to be in something that people respond to and that, you know, really touches them. And I feel like, you know, like at least with the people that I've met through the conventions, like, you know, that's been very clear and very validating, like having people come up and be like, you know, like you know, what you're doing is great. And like, you know, I really love your character and I love how, you know, all this stuff. And that's really amazing to hear. And then at the same time, like someone will come up and like immediately like burst into tears. And I don't know what to, it's so flattering, but no one prepares you for that. And it's
I think what you're supposed to do, and I'm not sure.
Oh yeah.
Okay. I think you're supposed to just place your tongue right at their chin and just lick the tear up the side of their face.
Good. Okay. Next. Yeah.
And
good
then
to know.
You just keep walking.
Cool.
I think that's what's supposed to, but cool. I can't, I'm not 100% sure.
Okay. Are we taking a note of that? Okay. So San Diego.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's what we'll do.
Make sure everyone's over 18.
Yeah. Yeah.
Excuse me. How old are you? 19. All right.
Copy that.
And then you keep walking. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Then you keep walking.
Yeah.
And I think that will start to create it'd be funny. It's just like you start to create the mythos of Robin is becoming like this. You're merging the character of you and him.
And licking faces. Yeah.
I think
I'm so glad
I've been going to cons for years, and so this is what you're supposed
to
do.
Cool.
Yeah, bad con advice. I look people's faces, but it is, and it's also kind of funny that because to a certain extent, you must kind of feel like, hey, don't relate to him too much.
Right? Exactly. Like,
technically still a villain.
Technically he's a horrible person. Like, you know, like he doesn't really respect human life to the extent that we all should, you know, that's an interesting thing where people, you know, on Twitter and whatnot, when they're like, I love your character so much. And it's like, okay, you know, you should, sure, but...
Well, because he, you know, because I think most people will identify more with the outcasts than they will, you know, the hero.
True.
The hero is fun to watch, you know, beat the shit out of people, but most people will relate to, oh, the outcasts. Yeah, I can, you know, if one or two more things were slightly different in my life, I could be a villain.
Right, yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, and that's the thing is that, like, you know... Again, like knowing like his backstory and you know, and I think it's a true thing for all characters. Like if you know where they're coming from, there is sympathy there that automatically comes into play. Like once you understand someone, you really understand them and what they've gone through, whether or not that's been explicit in the show, you know, like still I think like that's what we're trying to bring to it. And I think that's what I hope that's what people are responding to is just the fact that like, you know, they recognize, you know, what it feels like to be an outsider, what it feels like to be, you know, treated like less of a person because of the way you look or, mm-hmm. or, you know, what your interests are, which is, you know, what Oswald went through. Also being like, you know, a first generation American, like, you know, like all of that stuff like plays into his psychology and plays into like his incessant need for power and also to be recognized as someone who is worthwhile and who, you know, deserves certain, you know, things that other people have gotten just because of the way they are, you know,
sure.
Whereas he has not had that, you know? So I think that's what people are responding
What's
to.
What's your favorite part of him?
My favorite part of him is his ambition. I mean, you know, like I just, and with that, his cunning, like the fact that he can, you know, look not just one step ahead of everybody, but he really does make an effort to like, the person he's talking to and interacting with, he's figuring out who they are and basically plotting like every possible move that they would make in that situation. I respond to that because I think that like there is he really makes an effort as I think a defense mechanism, which is something I identify with, you know, ingratiating himself to someone so much to the point where like, and I don't take it this far, but where he like can actually manipulate them and get them on his side mm-hmm. to then do his, you know, his bidding or to, you know, right. So that he knows where they're coming from and he can like plot what they're going to do and then work his way around that. Like, you know, like, and I understand like, you know, I grew up in a very small town in Iowa and I was, you know, it was very Friday Night Lights. I don't do the sports.
Yeah. Okay. Hey,
Nerdist.
All right.
And I was like, you know, involved in theater in a small town where they didn't, you know, they understood, but didn't, it wasn't the popular thing to do, obviously. And so I understood what it was like to, and also being an overweight kid, like I understood what it was like to feel like less than and not equal to my peers. And my defense mechanism was very similar in the sense where like, I was like, I'm going to be funny and everybody's best friend and be like super nice and, you know, just ingratiate myself to everybody, you know, with the hopes that they won't beat the shit out of me once school is over. You know?
I'm familiar.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I know that mechanism. Yeah, really well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a thing we do.
It's a survival mechanism.
It really is. And I think that you know, that's another human aspect of like, obviously the penguin and Oswald, you know, it's this huge, you know, it's a Batman supervillain, but I feel like that is the human part of him that I'm really trying to bring to the forefront. You know,
was it? Do you have siblings?
I do.
Are they sportsy?
No. Well, I have one. I have a younger sister who is an opera singer.
Oh wow!
But she was also, I mean, you know, she was also like popular.
Okay.
You know, she was a cheerleader.
Oh, gotcha, gotcha. Yeah. A cheerleading opera singer.
Cheerleading opera singer.
I've never heard. That's
the pipes for that.
That's
too.
That's amazing.
I mean, come on, she could project.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. She. And she. You know. She. And also there's a difference, like I'm not a singer, but being a singer in theater in a small town is much easier to wrap your brain around.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, well, she's got talent, you know, yeah. Whereas like being, you know, playing Peter in, you know, The Diary of Anne Frank, you know, it's not quite as respected or understood, you know, I don't know. It's like it's not as clear of a thing, I guess, you know. But
are you okay? Were you okay with that? I mean, in the sense that, you know, if you had been super popular, if you had gotten all that stuff really easily, you know, maybe you wouldn't have developed the way that you turned out and had the talents that you had and pursued the things that you pursued.
Totally.
So is it kind of a? Do you embrace it?
Absolutely. I mean, I completely embrace, you know, everything, you know, everything I, you know, it's the, cliche or whatever it is, like, you know, everything I went through led me to being here with you today.
Sure, of course.
So, like, of course you can't really, like, look back and regret anything because, you know, obviously it made me who I am and it made me, like, you know, really, like, I think, like, maybe really help me really understand a character like Oswald, you know, and also other characters that I've played in the past, you know, like I've always sort of played, you know, like we can go back through my Law and Order resume, but you know, it's like, you know, there has been an undercurrent of that kind of you know, characters that are misunderstood and, you know, having just, you know, even though like I was never bullied to the extent that Oswald was, and I was always very, you know, supported by an incredibly supportive family, and, you know, and I did have friends in high school. It was not like I was, you know, the complete outcast or anything.
Right.
But that all did, you know, help me at least like understand that kind of psychology. And I think that's the reason why I like sort of been cast in that sort of way in a majority of my roles that I've played.
So you say you were an overweight kid.
Yeah.
Was that a psychological thing or was it just a physical thing? It's like, oh, I wasn't really paying attention. And then
I think it was both. Like, I think it was like, well, I mean, you know, I don't think I went through puberty until like I was 19 years old. You know what I mean? So I think that probably paid. Like played into it a little bit. I mean, a lot of it too was like, you know, being gay in like a high school in the middle of Iowa in the 90s, not the best situation.
Wait a minute. What?
Yeah, right? Shocker.
It's really hard to believe.
Everyone hold on to your seats.
Come on a second.
Right? Yeah.
So after Friday Night Lights, they didn't go out for show tunes?
No.
And this is a whole different.
You know, if I was running that show, they would have. I want a Glee Friday Night Lights mashup. I am calling Ryan Murphy when we get out of here.
I mean, you're mashing up the best of both.
Right?
Both worlds.
Yeah.
I think.
I think that's what we want.
Yeah.
America's ready.
Was it something that you. That you addressed back then? I mean, were you comfortable with yourself then? Or did it take time? Did you have to get to like New York and be like, oh, I'm not the abnormal one?
I got to college and that was when it was like, I knew. And in my head, I was like, just get to Chicago. Like, just get to school, get out of Iowa and then you'll be fine. Like I knew it in my head. And like that was my goal. And obviously it was like, you know, it, and of course, like, you know, at that point, like my parents were totally on board and like fine. And my mom was of course not surprised at all. And, but yeah, like, but the overweight thing, like, I think of a lot of it was just sort of like, as much as I was like trying to ingratiate myself to everybody and be, you know, funny and nice to everybody. I think I was also trying to disappear in a way. Like, I think that was the other half of it in the sense that, like, you know, I didn't consider myself because I, you know, love and, you know, granted it's high school. So, you know, it can't be anything more than like whatever, you know, high schoolers go through in terms of, you know, relationships and all of that and discovering themselves. But like, even then, like, it wasn't even an option for me. So, like, I think in a way it was kind of a way of kind of I didn't think I deserved it and I didn't think I would ever have it when I was in high school. So, like, I just didn't care and I kind of, like, ate my feelings.
Yeah.
In that way.
I mean, because I never, you know, to me, like, a person's weight really shouldn't define who they are. But if it's the result of really unhealthy choices, then I sort of feel like, oh, well, you know, don't so much worry about your weight. Worry about if you're doing things that are destructive to yourself.
Sure.
Like maybe try to understand that and make healthier emotional choices.
Right.
And then if the other part follows, great. And if not, it doesn't matter. But you should really find a way to be happy with yourself.
No, I know. Totally. And I think a lot of it, too, was like it was where I grew up and it was the time, too, because like, you know, growing up, like, Where I went to school, it was like you're either a jock or you are nothing, you know,
right.
Or you're like in terms of physicality, you know what
right.
I mean? Like there's no real, like you're either like playing the sports or you are, you know, walking in a circle around the gym and, you know, like going to McDonald's afterwards with your friends.
Well, maybe you should, you know, I'm sure maybe if you have a reunion coming up in a couple of years, you can go there and see how all the jocks fared.
Right? I know. Yeah. Well, I'm on Facebook like everybody else. Don't think I don't notice.
Are there any people, you said people were pretty cool to you in school.
They were fairly cool. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, I had been called like fag and like, you know, fat ass and all that shit. Can I say these things?
Yeah, of course.
I can say these.
Of course.
Like,
no. I mean, like, if
8,000 bleeps.
No. I wouldn't bleep that. The only time I would bleep that word is if someone said it in a disparaging manner.
Right.
But as part of your experience and telling the story of, you know, like what you went through, I think it's fine to say what you went through.
Well, yeah. And that was it. Yeah. And so, but it was never, again, no one ever beat me up. No one ever, like, you know, it never got physical or to the point where I was like really afraid for my well-being, but it definitely, like, you know, I'd been called, you know, those things and you know, again, that all just like worked in my head where I was like, just put
your head down.
It's going to be over soon.
Yeah.
Get to Northwestern.
I mean,
it's
you're lucky that you had that and that you had a supportive family. 'Cause imagine how many people go through that. I'm sure you have a million times. How many people go through that, but they don't have any support structure, so they're just like, I don't know. I guess I'm not gonna, you know, be happy. Maybe
yeah.
I don't deserve to be like, how? If anyone's listening who's maybe going through something similar, do you have advice for that type of situation?
Well, I mean, what all I can say is, find your passion, and through that, you will find people who love you no matter what you look like and you know and who you are and, you know, who you love. Like, you will find community there, and once you find the community, those people, that community will inspire you, hopefully, if you're receptive to it, to make healthy choices and take care of yourself in the best way. I mean, really, it's like I was lucky in the sense that I went to a school where I met amazing people who loved me and supported me and are my friends to this day. And without them, you know, I wouldn't be. I keep repeating myself.
No,
I wouldn't be sitting here with you.
I hear what you're saying.
But yeah, that would be my only advice. Is like, find your passion, stick with it, And through that, you will find community and support and love. And that's really what we're all looking for, I think.
And the second you got to Chicago, were you like, ah?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, it was a little bit of a transition. I mean, I was living, like, my freshman year, I was, like, living in this huge dorm on the North campus in Northwestern, which was in the frat quads. And, like, you know, the bathrooms didn't get cleaned over the weekend. And so, of course, Friday night, someone would puke in the middle of the bathroom and it would sit there. No. And you're literally like leaping over it to get to the shower.
And, like, the dorms, you know, never figured that out.
It is, no. I mean, hopefully now they have. I don't know. But yeah. And so at first it was, then I moved, and then I got more involved. You know, like, your freshman year is a lot about, like, fulfilling requirements and such. And then as the years go on, you get more and more involved in, you know, your major. And, like, for me, it was theater, and, like, just getting more involved in my acting class and, like, developing those connections and, you know, with my acting teacher and with my classmates, like, really, really brought me out of my shell and, like, helped me, like, just figure out who I was and, like, learn to, like, you know, love myself as much as I can.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it's still a process, you know, like,
well, I think too. if you have any degree of, there's this sort of weird thing that happens where you're like, well, I want to be able to love myself, but I don't want to get cocky. And so you sort of, like, beat yourself down a little bit. So you're like, well, I don't want to get a big head. So you beat yourself down, yeah, and you're self-deprecating. But then the danger is like, well, you don't want to do that too much, because you're not doing anyone any good if you beat yourself up all the time.
No, absolutely. It's absolutely true. And, you know, and that's, you know, and of course, that's the human condition. I mean, you know, we're, like, constantly, like, riding that line our entire lives, you know, between, like, self-acceptance and then also, like, maintaining, you know, self-awareness, you know, whereas, like, you know, figuring out, you know, not, yeah, and being able to relate to people without, like, feeling like you're, you know, above them or below them. It's finding that middle ground. And,
Well, it's kind of cool, because now you're in this position where you can be a role model to people.
Right.
And you can, I mean, you know, isn't that amazing?
It's insane. It's amazing. And
they can benefit from your struggles and your mistakes and your choices and your good choices.
I know. And that's the goal. Obviously, that's, like, an amazing part of it. And also unbelievably terrifying.
Well,
you know, like part of it too is, like, you know, not to get, like, too actory or whatever, but, like, it's a weird line or to walk, because as an actor, especially the kind of actor that I see myself as, which is a character actor, like, of course I'm sitting here telling you everything about my life, but, like, it's a weird thing, because, like, you want to also, like the character actors I respect the most, I know nothing about, you know what I mean? And, like, I you know, like, personally, because, like, we're creating illusion here, you know,
sure,
what I mean? So it's like, I think it's easier, like, as, you know, for your career or as an actor, you know, the less that is known about me personally, the easier it is for me to, you know, inhabit another character without people, like, having, you know, preconceived ideas about who I am
and
what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Obviously, which is the same reason why, like, the worst critics to ever bring to a play or a show or anything that you're in are your parents and your best friends. Cause they're like, screw you. You don't make that face. You don't say that.
Well,
you don't do those things.
I hear what you're saying, but I also think, you know, people are savvy now. They know you're
true.
You know, they know Oswald's a different guy. Make that, you know.
I would hope.
I certainly respect the idea of, like, well, you know, I want to keep some stuff that's private, so I have my own, you know, protective bubble. But just as I think even as a character actor, you could still. I don't think it's terrifying, because you don't really, to be a role model, and especially you, and all my interactions with you, you've been nothing but just the nicest guy. Is that you don't have to be anything more than just yourself, and just being yourself. And it's hard to process that, because you think, oh, well, I have to do something to be a role model, or I have to do something to help. And you don't. You just have to be you, you know. And so you know your experiences and the things that you've learned, you know, like, that's part of the legacy that you'll leave to the world, is like, these are my experiences, this is what I went through. And other people will benefit from that, just knowing, hey, that guy seems like he turned out okay. Maybe I'm not so bad after all. So I don't think it's as daunting as it actually sounds.
Right. However, just having influence on anybody is so terrifying. You know what I mean? Like,
don't shit in public.
I know.
Don't take a shit in the street.
Yeah, God
forbid. As long as you don't take a shit in the street, you're gonna be fine.
Oh
man.
On my way over here.
No, you know what? See what's great about
it was Sunset Boulevard though, so that doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Right?
Oh, okay, it's already covered in shit. You could do weird stuff like that and just be like, I'm researching for my character.
Exactly.
Because that's what Oswald would do.
He's probably taking a shit in the street. I mean, I'll talk to Bruno Heller about that and see if we can work that into season two. I'll have to get my double to do it, though. But that was the other thing, too, about getting this role. Like you know, like I spent like so many years being like, you know, if I only get this one thing. And it wasn't even on this magnitude, but it was just like, if I only get like a recurring role on a TV show or, you know, and that was really my goal, like just to work consistently. If only I get that, everything will be solved.
Of course.
All the problems will go away. And
that happened, right?
Oh yeah. Everything's
no more problems.
Sunshine and roses. And I just took a shit on Sunset Boulevard. But that's the thing is that like, yeah, it doesn't. But it obviously, a lot of problems have been solved in certain ways. Like a lot of pressure is taken off and like of me, like in terms of like, you know, the actual physical costs a lot to live in New York City. You know, I have health insurance, which a lot of people in this country do not. And these are things that I'm eternally grateful for and like have made my life so much easier in that way. However, you know, then my identity for the last 15 years has been like a struggling actor, and then what happens to the person who gets what they want? I mean, this is the line from Willy Wonka.
Right.
His answer was, they lived happily ever after. That's not exactly true. You know, it just sort of like illuminates the other things that, you know, deep down I was sort of like passing off to like, oh, you know, I feel this way because I don't have the regular part on a TV show. You know what I mean? Like deferring all of the, you know, like, so it's been a really, it's like this year has been a lot of stuff.
Yeah. What are you
going to
defer now? Like, how are you going to defer happiness now?
I know, right? Like
that fucking universe called your bluff,
like,
man.
Do I actually have to be happy now? Like, what the hell?
Okay.
What
here's
does
your
that
show.
Feel like?
Now they're just staring at you like, hey, you'd be happy. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, am I being happy now? I don't know. Am I happy?
I don't know. Is this good? Yeah. Right. Am I appreciating this moment as much as I should? You know? Yeah. But again, like Danny Cannon, who's our executive producer, who, you know, is an amazing guy. He directed the pilot and the last episode of Gotham. And he also directs all of our post-production. He has an amazing term for this, and he calls them champagne problems.
Yes, of course.
These are champagne
problems. They're champagne problems.
You know, and so, like, I, of course, like, you know, it's nothing compared to what people are going through, you know, with their day-to-day lives.
Yeah.
Know? But it's just part of, you know, we all go through this in certain ways, so.
Well, and also, if you, like you said, you know, if you're used to being struggling actor guy, you know, you're going to have patterns that were established for years that you like habitual thinking that you have to figure out how to get out of.
Right. Totally. And then like, you know, to this day, like I, you know, like the second I feel that I have a moment where I'm like, oh, things are actually might be okay. Crashing into my brain is like, don't get used to it. It's going to go away. It's going to go away. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
that's just because of what we do. You're so used to things just being in the wind, like, oh, I gotta think
on the verge.
Oh,
and
so close.
They,
oh,
right.
No.
Yeah.
What?
Right.
Oh, no. Where is it? You know?
Totally. Yeah.
And it goes, you know, like it comes and it goes, but you know, it's, I think if you can't fully control it.
Right.
You can't mostly control it, but you know, you can't control the choices that you make, and you can control being nice to people, and you can't control working hard, and you can't control appreciating stuff, and
right.
You know, all that stuff helps, and you can control
saving your money.
Saving your money. You can control, like, you know, the next kind of role that you take, you know, like you can take the Cranston route and be like, I'm going to do something totally unpredictable, or you could do something like,
he's
it's
so
just
lucky.
I think you're safer than you think you are. It's just, we're taught in this business to never get comfortable
because right.
It just doesn't want you to get comfortable.
No, totally. Exactly. Like you feel like once you get comfortable, then you're dead in the water. You know, or then you're like, then it's over.
I think complacency is bad.
Right.
I don't think being comfortable is terrible, but I do think it's important to constantly
making yourself a little bit uncomfortable. So you're just growing, and so you're learning, and you're trying new things.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Yeah.
But I don't think you have to be a miserable, uncomfortable person 100% of the time.
I know. It could go that way too. Yeah. I mean, how many people do you know who are that way, like who do have success and yet it's never, ever enough? And they are just as intolerable as, yeah, you know, the people who are, you know, like pining for something that will never happen. You know, it's like, yeah.
It's kind of a kind of a pathology, though. Like, those are people that, you know, no matter what, no, you weren't happy when you weren't working. Now you're happy when you're working. You know, you're not happy when you're working. So you're just not going to be. You just have to figure out why you're not happy.
Right, and it goes beyond career. There's it goes like
Because when you envision that dream job, which it seems like you have now,
right?
When you're envisioning it, you always just think of the headlines parts of it of like, I'm on a show and people like me and I'm making money. Like, you know, you don't think about the work and the pressure and, you know, like how it affects and being more public and what that means. And like, you don't ever take into account all that stuff. So it is, you know, it's a change, and change is always scary no matter what.
That's exactly it. Like, it's just like, yeah, the change has been insane. And like, you know, yeah. And then, like, yeah. And navigating who you are through that change. That's the challenge.
And certainly, you know, if you don't have to talk about anything you don't want to, but I'm guessing that you have a partner that you've had that's supportive and is kind of keeping you, keeping you tethered to reality.
He's keeping this whole ship afloat. I mean, Oswald exists because of my husband, for sure.
That's
like,
nice. Yeah,
it's amazing. And like, I mean, we've been together over 11 years.
Oh my gosh.
Been married for almost 4. And like, yeah, and he's, you know, and he's brilliant. And he also, you know, works in the business, and like, he's he sees me spiraling, and he's able to be like, you know, take a second.
So what's your relationship advice? 'Cause 11 years in this, in 11 years in this business is incredible. And I know that you know, that might bum people out to hear that 11 years is a long time in this, but it is a really long, you have a very successful relationship.
Yeah.
And how did you maintain it, particularly with the kind of tumultuous nature of what we have to go through?
Well, I think we've been lucky in the sense that we've been together for such a long time. We got together when we were both young. And, you know, things were just starting out. So we've been able to, like, navigate, like, you know, the initial starting out excitement, and then the dry periods where it's really scary. And then now, like, we're going into this other phase where, like, things are happening for both of us. And, you know, but ultimately, I have no advice, only because, like, I just lucked out and found, like, a really awesome dude. Like, it's just, like, someone who, like, you know, honestly, like, makes me laugh to this day. I know it sounds so cheesy.
That's not cheesy. That's important.
But, like, and also, like, you know, like, I had someone say to me recently, someone who's in, you know, a long-term relationship, who was like, and this is not to, you know, and I'm sure every relationship is different, but he was like, do you ever have moments where you're, like, sitting down at dinner and you just have nothing to say to each other? And I do. I mean, there are times where we're sitting down and, like, it's just, you know, we're just going to eat. And, like, you know, you can't, like, obviously talk to someone forever.
How was your day?
So, yeah, exactly.
Like, have a good day?
Yeah, have a good day, blah, blah, blah. Did you see what happened on CNN? You know, like, we could do that forever. But at the same time, like, we never are at a lack of things to talk about. Like, he's just really smart, and I find him, like, incredibly interesting, like, to this day. And so, like, I just feel incredibly lucky, and I only hope that everyone can find that, you know? Like, it's just it's random. We met in an audition, for God's sake.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes, we've been.
What was it an audition for? Do you remember?
Frito-Lay Stacks. I don't know if you're familiar with the product. Frito-Lay was trying to horn in on the Pringles.
Yep. They were going to stack that. The problem is our chips aren't stacked.
They're not stacked.
People exactly. want things in stacks. Yeah, research right. shows people like stackable food.
And that's totally how I talked in the audition. I was like, yeah, we want stacks.
Stack this shit, Frito-Lay.
Stack the shit, Frito-Lay. And thankfully, neither of us got a job because we were both in. It worked in L.A. and we were both New York based, and like we were both neither. It was a callback, and neither of us were cast, and so we were both able to run into each other at the bar that weekend.
Hey,
and so yeah,
it's a good thing you guys weren't stack material.
I know, right? Thank you, Frito-Lay, for never hiring me.
Did you guys talk at all at the audition, or just like
we did? We talked just as you do, like when you're in audition, you know, like, and you know, it's a weird environment where like you're like sitting with a bunch of people who are all going out for the same part, and it's a callback too, and like we're all really want it, you know, because we're all like, you know, struggling actors in New York City, and like, but you know, like some people talk, some people don't. I tend to be the one. I talk when I'm nervous, obviously, and so does he. And so I think we talked about the Jetsons for some reason. I don't know why.
Because it's great.
Because it's amazing.
Yeah.
And we were trying to remember. And this is again. This was 2004.
Mm-hmm.
So like this is before. This is flip phone.
Yeah.
Time. So you know. Can't just like, oh my God, I sound like such an old, like you can't, you know, you have a question,
the old
you don't
phones.
Google it immediately.
No.
You know what I mean? Like you actually have to like talk about it and maybe you don't answer your question. God forbid.
And you just don't know.
And you just don't know. But you had a conversation.
Did
about
you
it.
Answer the question?
What was yes. It? We found out that Rosie was the name of
Rosie was the
robot maid. Yes, yeah. Exactly. That was the conversation.
If I were there, I could have just told you that.
Right.
I'm sorry I wasn't there.
Well, it's a good thing you weren't.
So I'm curious in the, this may sound like a really dumb question, but it's just something that I'd never thought of before. Mm-mm. But in the gay community, if you meet a dude that you like, is there any part where you're like, are we just bonding because we're guys, or is this person, and should I, like, how do you know when?
I had no idea. Like, especially in an audition place, especially in 2004.
There must be a whole other added weird mystery thing that I never, you know, people don't have to.
Right, exactly. And also, you know, like we're going in for like, dude with Frito-Lay. And so like, you know, that tends to bleed over into your like personality when you're in the waiting room. You know, I had no idea he was gay. He didn't know I was gay. And again, like, you know, we didn't get the job. And then we ran into each other at the gay bar.
Nice.
Not the gay. I mean, it was New York City.
There's one? That's so crazy.
There's only one.
I don't think there's more there.
You'd be surprised. No.
That place must be
this
so
was
crowded.
2004, Chris. No. So we were like, and then, so yeah, I saw him there and I was like, holy crap. I was like, and you know, again, this was 2004. It was the first time that I had ever seen anyone from the audition world, and I, you know, was auditioning with like the same guys. Like we were all sort of all going out for the same parts. First time I had seen someone who was like out of the closet enough to go to a freaking gay bar, and so I was like, oh my God, I have to talk to him because you know, like we were just at the thing, and we should be friends if he's like, you know, comfortable enough with himself to like go to a gay bar, you know? And so like that was initially why I was like, I had to go over and say hello. And so, yeah. And even then we didn't exchange numbers. And then we ran into each other again randomly on the street. And I was with Billy Eichner. Billy and I were walking back to our apartment and we ran into my husband and my future husband, and we just like talked, and then we walked away, and Billy Eichner was like, you should date that guy. He's now a producer on Billy on the Street. And he is like, you know, does amazing things for Billy on the Street and for Funny or Die. I mean, like, you know, it's just amazing how things work out. Like that's the other good thing about getting older is like these random things that happen in your life, these random like occurrences and meetups and instances where like at the time you thought it was like, who knows, whatever. And then you get older and you look back and it's like, oh, God, if I have another story.
Yeah.
But you're like, if that didn't happen, I wouldn't have
I mean, you're all
married.
Fixtures in each other's lives now.
I know. And it's like, yeah, and we're
thanks
all connected.
Thanks to Stacks.
Thanks to Frito-Lay. But also thanks to, and I'm going to tie this back into Gotham.
Please.
There was an episode, and I forget what number. I think it was 15. It's the episode where Oswald, Jim, and Bullock go upstate to the farm to investigate this cache of information that Commissioner Loeb has, and you know, and don't. It's okay if you don't remember, but it's like, so we go up to this farmhouse and we run into like this creepy old couple. The woman who played the creepy old lady is this actress named Becky Ann Baker, who is married to Dylan Baker, who's an actor on The Good Wife. Mm-hmm. And she also plays Lena Dunham's mom on okay. Girls. And she's an incredible actress. She and my husband were in the same theater festival way back in 2001 or 2. And because of her, my husband got his agent and was then able to be at that audition.
Oh, it all comes back around.
And then I blow her away with a shotgun in Gotham. Like the last, like literally, like blow her away in the face.
Have you ever seen the show? Did you ever see the old British show Connections?
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's a classic.
Yeah. Oh, wait, no. Is it like an 80s show? Yeah. And they talk about like
James Burke.
It's a science.
It's sort of sciencey, but it's more about history and like.
They used to rerun it on like the Science Channel or Discovery or something like late at like 2 o'clock in the morning or
That's
something.
That's my favorite kind of stuff where it's like, if this person hadn't invented this kind of gun, it's like how chewing
exactly
gum led to
about.
The first satellite.
Yes.
You know?
And it was like all like 3-2-1 contact kind of like graphics and stuff.
Yes.
Oh my God. I totally know exactly what you're talking
about. I haven't heard a 3-2-1 contact reference in a long time.
I posted like the intro to Twitter the other day. I don't know what possessed me, but that song is amazing. Like, it's like guitar and like, 3-2-1 contact.
I just remember like, contact is the reason for the notion where everything happens.
Oh, 30 something.
Yay. Yeah, I wish. It's a Great Space Coaster. Were you a fan? Did you see that show?
No.
Because that was another one of those shows that. The song was on my iTunes, and it just was on shuffle, and then it just came up the other day.
Oh yeah,
and I hadn't heard it in years.
Were you like living your life, like just jamming out?
Such a weird Great Space Coaster was such a weird show.
What was it? What was it? Was it British? Was it?
It wasn't British. It was. It was just basically like a children's sort of. Sketch comedy show.
Oh, okay.
And I think it was kind of educational.
It sounds so.
There was a character called Gary Gnu, who read the news, which she called the Gnus.
Oh, the
I don't know why I'm focused on this at the moment since
I
don't remember it. But if I can pull it up, maybe if you hear a bit of the theme song, it'll.
In the very least, I will pretend that I know it. So
Great
this wasn't
coaster.
Worth nothing. I'm just kidding.
So I just had to breeze by the Greatest American Hero theme to get to the Great Space
We can listen
coaster.
To that, too.
Let's see if this... So 70s.
Oh. I do know this.
Get on the Great Space Coaster. We'll explore a common ride and a fantasy to a place where dreams fly fast and free.
With new friends and new things
it's
to
like
see.
A sketch we'll of a weird kid show.
I'm living for it.
It's super trippy.
Ah,
children's entertainment was very trippy when we were growing up, and now it seems much more grounded.
It really is. When you look at, I just did a thing where I. Why did I start with this story? I presented a scholarship. It's a Fred Rogers scholarship, and then it got me remembering Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And what was the name, Miss Lady Elaine?
Mm-hmm.
How fucking sorry.
You could say that.
How crazy. Did she look?
Yeah.
Do you remember like the
No,
the
I'm going to say it
look?
For you. They didn't look fucking crazy.
She looked insane.
Yeah.
And this was like, you know, now a children's show, everything must be cute.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't have some... She looked like Elaine Stritch. I mean, it was like Elaine Stritch in puppet form.
Maybe that's who they based it.
I would not be surprised in the slightest if that was it.
I don't know. I think they were
and
just...
And that may inform a lot of things about me and the choices that I've made in my life. The amount of Mr. Rogers'
name. If there hadn't been Lady Elaine, you wouldn't have decided to go into which brought you...
Right? I wouldn't have seen, you know, Elaine Stritch on Broadway. I mean, where would I be right now? I don't know. See, it's Connections.
It's all Connections. Mm-hmm. I think that show might be on Netflix. Can you see if Connections is on Netflix, Katie?
God, I hope so.
Because every episode is endlessly fascinating.
And the guy with like that long gray hair and eight rows of teeth and
British professor.
Oh,
yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah, the best.
The best.
Would you ever like host a show? Do you think?
Totally. We're not.
Did you ever?
No.
No.
I auditioned for a lot of them. I did, I would go into Nickelodeon, like, for a while. I would go, like, in, like, at least once a week and be like, hey, this is Robin Lord Taylor, and I'm here, and we're going to watch Doug, was that a show? Yeah. Yeah.
I think you're confusing Doug and Ed, Edd n Eddy.
Ah, yes, I am.
If I could just go out on a limb for a second.
You know everything.
I know a sampling of things. Is it on?
Just on DVD.
What? Come on, Netflix, stream that shit. Yeah, that's it. There's, James Burke.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. Connections.
Connections.
Today, we'll see how toenails led to the nuclear reactor.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah.
Another show, it was the British parody, like, of Connections.
Look around you. Peter Serafinowicz, yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. Goodness.
Yeah, a fucking amazing.
Good Lord.
Look around you.
Maths.
Look around you.
Yes. Oh, my God, no one knows about this.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of people listening to this podcast probably know, but if you don't, look around you.
It'll change your life.
It'll absolutely change your life.
Yes, yes.
So what do you, now, are you pretty focused on Gotham, or do you have side stuff that you want to get going, or your own projects?
Yeah, I don't want to be vague, but I have to be vague. But like, hopefully, there's an independent film that's coming around the bend that would be nice to work on in the next month. We're close to nailing that down. We have 2.5 months, and so it's like, it's not really a lot of time to really get involved in something, but really and then the other thing too is that everyone asks me, like, you know, are you afraid of being recognized as the Penguin for the rest of your life? It's like,
which is a shitty front-loaded question.
What is the alternative? You know, like, the alternative is never working.
Well,
I mean?
Also,
and, like, and also, this is an iconic, like, what is bad about that?
No, you know what? It's not. That's a ridiculous question, because things just don't work that way anymore.
No, exactly.
Because, you know, you're one good film away from all of a sudden, like, completely breaking out. Like, it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter.
Even if I wasn't, even if it, like, just ended, you know, thankfully it was the second season, even if it just ends at the second season, like, come on. I mean, it's amazing to be part of this, to have this in my life, you know, like, I don't fear, like, I'm going to actually, like, you know, stand up for myself.
Break it
down. And have self-pride, in the sense that I do believe that, like, I have enough talent to be, oh, God, say.
You have enough talent.
Like, stop it. I'm good enough. I'm smart enough.
And God darn it, people like you. Yeah, you have you are confident in your abilities.
I'm confident enough in my abilities that, like, even if it's, and I'm not looking for, you know, like, to be, you know, in the next, you know, Steven Spielberg movie or anything, but, like, you know, I have a feeling, like, you know, like, there will be things. The fact that I was even in things before this is a miracle.
What if Steven Spielberg was listening to the podcast and he was just dialing a number, like, oh,
no, I want to be.
And he just closed his flip phone.
Steven, I really want to be in that. If you're listening right now. Or if one of your kids are listening. Okay.
Yeah, no, because especially, you know, you kind of have a focused path too, where you're like, I want to be a character actor. I want to disappear into roles. And I feel like they're, you know, particularly because of the boost that Gotham will give you, if you just want to, like, be in a cool thing, if you just want to be in a cool independent movie, you could do that now, because people are like, well, fuck yeah, of course we're going to want that guy.
Bring it.
And then you'll get to, you know, dye your hair a different color and be a completely different person.
Well, that's the other good thing about the character, too, is that, like, I don't naturally look like Oswald, you know what I mean? So, like, God willing, the show will run for years, knocking on wood. But, you know, like, at the end of it, and that's the great thing about the character, is that I'll be able to, like, go back to my natural state of blondness and the way I look, and, like, sort of put the character away. Like, what I love about the character is that, like, the actual physical transformation is just so much a part of who he is, with his mannerisms, the way he speaks, the way he looks, the way he walks. All of these things are come into creating this character, which is, like, amazing for an actor, because it's like, yeah, it's like all these other, you know, aspects that, you know, it's not just me, you know, like, there's a physical transformation, which is nice. And so, like, God forbid it ends, but when it does, I'll be able to just sort of put it away and move along and change and go back to.
And if you wanted to, if you wanted to embrace that the rest of your life, you could. You could be like, I'm the Penguin. I'm the you could identify as that. But I think if you make choices to do other things, you know, then you don't have to just you. The point is, you will have a lot of options. and you're gonna be okay.
You're gonna be
A-okay.
We'll see, man. I mean, anyway, it's all good. It's all good, and you know, like thinking about being typecast, and I've said this a million times, and my husband told me to stop apologizing for repeating things, but I just did it again.
No, repeat.
The second half of the term typecast is cast.
Yeah.
You know, and like when you've gone like 15 years, like, you know, working like very intermittently, this is the goal. And so anything after this is fantastic.
Because you can make different choices and you can do different fun things.
Whatever.
And,
yeah.
You know, so you're up for doing whatever. And also, I think we have it on record as you saying, was it fuck Spielberg? I'm not. Did I get that wrong?
Chris,
Robin Lord Taylor says fuck Steven Spielberg?
No.
Wait,
no,
what?
No.
Or did I not?
I said.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I said I want to fuck Steven Spielberg. Oh. That was also a joke. That was a joke.
He just opened his flip phone again.
Okay. Good.
Well, in that case.
Good. Oh, my God. I can't believe it.
But, you know, this just sailed by. This, you know, we've been talking for an hour.
Holy crap.
It feels like 10 minutes.
I can't thank you enough for being so nice. The talking to him was an amazing moment in my life. Honestly, and your energy is just unparalleled, and I can't thank you enough for being so kind.
Oh my God.
So supportive of the show and of The Walking Dead and just of me in general, and it's really, it really means everything.
I like meeting nice people, and you know, it's very important because not everyone is nice, and so when you meet nice people, you're like, I want that person to, you know, I want them to do well, because there needs to be more nice people in the business.
Oh, dude, that means so much to me. I have no idea.
Besides the fact that you're immensely talented, I mean, like, that's...
whatever.
You know, well, I know whatever, but, you know, that part's cool, too. But it's that's why I think it's kind of better to have to struggle for a little while so that you really appreciate the opportunities when they come along, and then you really give them the care and gratitude that they deserve.
I agree. I'm just so happy this is happening at this point in my life, because I think if it was happening like 10 years ago, I would be on some E program, not in the most like flattering fashion. TMZ would be a lot more prevalent in my life or something. Yeah.
The Stacks guy, Robin Lord Taylor. Like you would just, you'd be the Frito-Lay Stacks guy.
Yeah, right.
It's
really Stacks guy. Right.
Well, the season finale of Gotham is Monday, May 4th. And then are you back shooting already?
No, I'm mid to late June we resume.
Okay, so it's not that far.
I know it's not, and I'm dying to know what happens. I know nothing.
What, they didn't tell you?
Nothing. And I, like, even like as far as like, I don't even know if I can get a haircut, because I don't know if it like picks up from like where we ended up. I know nothing. So yeah,
champagne problems, dude.
Yes.
Good to see you, Rob.
You too, man. Thank you so much.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone. Good night. Good day. Good morning. Connections.
Internet.
The internet.
The internets.
How a Shih Tzu's eye booger led to the creation of the internet. This
Are
is
we
our
going to read?
New
oh,
guest
okay,
book. No, this is
read from the Book of Mormon. Oh.
No.
Wait, are they really doing another one?
Another, I don't know. Are they doing another Beetlejuice?
They keep talking about it. Like,
I've heard rumors. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me with Birdman and everything. People must be like, we got to capitalize on that shit.
He was actually, I thought he was fantastic.
He was amazing. He's always amazing.
Well, in that, but also Saturday Night Live. I thought he fucking killed it.
He's a comedy guy. Like, he's a... Oh, boy, Katie. Just got a text from my mom.
Oh.
I want to start doing a podcast.
Yes! That's brilliant.
She's a sports, you know, she's a hardcore sports person.
Ooh.
Which is funny. Both my parents were sports people, and I'm not a sports person.
Uh-huh.
And,
where are you from?
I grew up in Memphis.
Okay.
Because they, well, they no. You know what? That's not true, Katie. I just liked computers and video games and chess. Like, I didn't, and D&D. Like, I just didn't.
Did you play Sierra? Are you a Sierra nut?
No, I didn't play Sierra.
Oh, okay. Like King's Quest or any of that?
I played... Oh, Sierra, the game
yeah,
company.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I played King's Quest. I had a... My roommate had a computer that...
TGS?
No, it was...
What did he have?
Gateway 2000.
It wasn't. I had a Gateway 2000. This was in the. This was in the. This was in the early 90s.
Yeah.
It was. I don't. It wasn't. I had a Tandy. My first computer was a Tandy.
My dog's name is Tandy.
Why didn't we get into this on the pod?
Shit. We're still recording.
Oh really?
So yeah, my roommate had King's Quest on his computer, and I wish I could remember the computer, but this was the early 90s, and the computer ran at 11 megahertz, but if you hit the turbo button, you could kick it up to 22 megahertz, and then
work.
You could, and then in King's Quest, he would walk twice as fast,
yeah,
because the processor was going
faster.
I think
my friend had that. Yeah. That was such a relief. We had the disk, we didn't have a hard drive in our first computer, and my parents got me King's Quest 4. Course, because it's the one where the princess runs around. I was really into it. It was like 12 floppy disks.
Oh, yeah.
So it would be like,
please insert disk
please
2.
Please insert disk 2, disk 8. And then, God forbid, if you accidentally went off the screen back to a previous disk when you didn't mean to, then you had to insert the disk.
Go back,
insert the other disc just to go back.
You know, I know this sounds weird, but I really like the consistency of a floppy disk. Like, it just had a great feeling to it.
Yeah, there was something nice. Yes, you knew, yes.
Shink, shrunk, and then shut the door.
And then, you had to manually shut the door.
So good.
Oh, my God.
I know, everything's
Let's go back.
Let's go back to floppy disks.
My cousin works at Google. And he took me to he's in Pittsburgh, but he comes to New York to the New York Google offices. Oh,
they're pretty sweet. Yeah.
Have you been?
Yeah.
So you've been to like the museum of old computers that still work.
I've been to no. Okay.
They have like a whole hall of like Tandys and Gateway 2000s and Apple II GSs and Apple II E's and like
I had an
and they all do their thing. Like you can play Oregon Trail and
whatnot. Oh, that's fucking rad.
It's
I used to play Zork on the Apple IIe.
Oh man,
because the chess club, the math department had Apple IIe's when I was in school.
Yes,
and so
with
that's
the
where I played
screen,
text-based the, games. Yeah, the light green glow, and I loved those machines.
We had a game where. In my school where you were like you were a red blood cell, and I don't remember the name of this game. Someone out there needs to find this.
Oh, that sounds really familiar.
You played like a red blood cell who like went through the body and, you know, did certain things and like aligned yourself with like white blood cells or something. I'm probably misremembering this, but it really blew my mind back in the day. Although it was no Oregon Trail. Oregon Trail is
no, that stands the test of time.
That is forever to this
that
day.
And that and Zork for me.
Okay, I just said whatever. I don't know what to say.
Thank you very much.
Hey.
Thank you.
Thank you. Great. Amazing.
What's up next? Do you have a couple?
I just have to go live tweet Gotham at some point.
Oh, it's Monday. That's right.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah, we have plenty.
Oh, and you're wearing a Scythian Stevens shirt.
I am.
He's great.
Isn't he great? Do you have the new album?
I don't have it yet.
It is It's really, I mean, he went, this was from his last album, which he went kind of on a journey, which was, I loved, but his new one is back to very acoustic, really just, and it's gorgeous.
That's
it's
great. Just gorgeous. Yeah, I have the Come On Feel the Illinois album.
Ah, that one's good.
I still listen to over and over again.
Oh my gosh, Chicago is like one of my favorites.
Have you met him? Do you know him?
I haven't, but my husband did, and he worked because my husband is also a video projection designer. So, and Sufjan does a lot of video projection design in his live shows.
Yeah.
And so he assisted, the woman who does it for Sufjan. I can't remember the name. And so, so he got to work on the show, work with him. And then he also like had just at that time bought have you ever seen the 3D cameras?
Yeah.
With the two. Yeah. And so, and this, like it had just come out. And so he had like taken like a million photos and then was backstage and showed it to, his supervisor. And she was like, Sufjan has to see this. And so she called Sufjan over and then my husband handed it over to him. And he just like spent the next like 45 minutes just like freaking out, which of course makes perfect sense. I mean, it was like the 3D camera experience for him was, you know,
that's rad. Yeah, I love that guy. I've never seen him live, but I really love his music.
He's amazing live, and yeah, he's just like, yeah, super cool dude.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.